Hello, and welcome to More Than a Movie, the show about films and filmmaking here on Campus FM. My name's Andrew Bonello, and along with a guest I'll welcome onto the show a little later on, we'll take a journey into the magical world of movies to explore why film is such a powerful reflection of real life's struggles and joys. And this week, it's Western dramas for the cowboy in us all. To be clear, the Western is a classic Hollywood genre with many greats going back many, many decades. Today, though, we'll mainly be focusing on some more recently made westerns that really tip their hat to those old classics, but also offer some contemporary interpretations and performances. Coming up just a little later on the show, a ragtag septuplet of freedom fighters get a modern update to a classic story.
So you seek revenge?
I seek righteousness, but I'll take revenge.
I need more than a few to help us fight.
What a bunch of misfits we are.
You know how to shoot that thing.
We join a tense voyage that quickly goes off the rails.
What are you doing out here, Dan? You got a family to protect.
Don't talk to me like you know me, Wade. We ain't friends.
I told you to stay home.
I left home. You turn around right now.
And a mysterious visit to an alpine mountain village places everyone there in mortal peril.
You better keep moving.
This is no place for you. You could still leave.
We're actually flipping the order of our show today. Our guest interview will be in the second half of the show, and that because this week's guest acted in a major supporting role in one of the very movies we'll be discussing today. Super exciting, right? I know! So stay tuned for all that, coming up just a little later on. But to begin with then, what about Western dramas that were shot here in Malta? Well, you wouldn't think that any westerns had ever been shot here, right? It hardly seems like the right geological backdrop, but it's amazing what delving into the archives turns up. And wouldn't you know it, I discovered 1985's Final Justice. Homicidal Sheriff Thomas Jefferson Geronimo is tasked with escorting a mobster to Malta. When the prisoner escapes, Geronimo goes to catch him. And this film features an OK Corral-style shootout staged, believe it or not, in the piazza of the Grand Master's Palace in Valletta.
Hold it!
Right there. Joseph Palermo. Where is he?
There you go, a Maltese Western, I kid you not. Well, okay, it's set in the 1980s, but I challenge you to convince me that this isn't a heartfelt love letter to the greats of the Western prairies. The film stars Joe Don Baker, a very well-known Western actor from both TV and film, from 1960s Hollywood. And here, he literally parades around Malta in a cowboy hat and suit, sporting a sheriff's star on his breast, and looking like one mean son of a gun. And indeed, from the clips I saw, this does seem to be a story chock full of international intrigue, double-crossing, and cowboy-like tomfoolery, albeit one not to be taken entirely too seriously. There's lots of on-location photography from various spots around the Maltese Islands, and a number of local actors appear to have been cast in supporting roles.
There is one more hills, just one more. By you or not. As God is my judge, I will keep you in custody until you are playing news tomorrow.
So there we have it, for Western action taking place in all too familiar locales, albeit from Malta's now long bygone era of the 1980s. Load up your six-shooter with a good dose of lead pellets as you queue up the VHS cassette for Final Justice.
You're being a royal pain in the ass to the Maltese. I want you on the next plane to Texas, and that's an order, Sheriff.
I am not one of your immigration flunkies, Wilson. I do not take orders from you.
That's where you're wrong, Geronimo. You were assigned to work under my command as a courtesy from your mayor. Now, if I have to call Texas to verify that to you, I'll do it. But at this moment, you're on suspension. I'll take your badge.
Okay, that'll be quite enough of that, I think. Now, what about westerns that actually take place in the western locale and era? Well, we can't discuss modern westerns really without talking about 1992's pioneering Oscar winner. Retired gunslinger William Money reluctantly takes on one last job with the help of his old partner Ned Logan and a young man, the Schofield Kid. This is, of course, Clint Eastwood's Unforgiven.
My guess is you're calling yourself Mr. William Money.
How about being my partner? I'm heading up north, in through Nebraska, up to Wyoming. Gonna kill a couple of no-good cowboys.
For what?
For cutting up a lady. Cut up her face.
Have you seen enough blood for one night?
Well, what can we say here? Clint Eastwood, a veteran of Hollywood genre cinema, both in front and behind the camera, is joined by a stellar cast here. Gene Hackman, Morgan Freeman, and the great Richard Harris all don their pistols. The story is a curiously simple affair, really. Eastwood's character, William Money, is dragged away from a hapless life as a pig farmer, seeking the reward to avenge a prostitute who's been brutally mutilated by a drunken, abusive client.
Say what?
You don't look no meaner than hell, cold-blooded damn killer.
I ain't like that anymore, kid.
$1,000 reward, Will.
Nobody's gonna come.
So you still have that Spencer rifle, huh?
Yeah. He's my partner. If he don't go, I don't go.
What's it come to, three ways?
Well, Unforgiven, of course, pays homage to the Hollywood greats of yesteryear in so many ways, including many of Sergio Leone's spaghetti westerns from the 1960s that Eastwood himself starred in. It's really vintage western filmmaking. There's also a really nice turn from young actor James Wolvert as the Schofield Kid. And great things were expected of this young talent after his breakout performance here. Ultimately, though, it seemed that his subsequent career never quite seemed to coalesce and materialize thereafter.
Well, you sure killed the hell out of that fella today.
Hell yeah. I killed the hell out of him, didn't I? Three shots and he was taking a...
Take a drink, kid.
It don't seem real. I ain't gonna never breathe again, ever. How he's dead. And the other one, too. All on account of pulling the trigger.
Well, this is superb Western drama, and no mistaking it. The film builds to a tremendous dramatic climax as Money ultimately breaks his vow to his dead wife to renounce his vicious old ways when the cruelty of the New World finally catches up with him and his teammates. Check out the soundscape created as a backdrop for this dramatic moment.
And those of you who rode it yesterday, you get one drink for that, too. Hold it. Now, hold it. Now, that's two. But after that, it comes out of your own pocket. You hear me, Skinny?
Yes, sir.
All right. We're pulling out early in the morning. We're going to chase these fellas clear down to Texas, so don't spend too much of your own money, right?
We're going to divide up into four parties.
And we'll hit all the farms and the trails to make a big circle. And we're bound to come across somebody who's seen these skunks.
And Eastwood's talents go on and on. He often composes music for his movies, including Claudia's theme for this film, which here is orchestrated by Lenny Niehaus and performed by Laurindo Almeida. Let's have a little listen.
Thank you.
conclusion, then, Unforgiven might just be the definitive modern Western drama. All genre fans of any kind really ought to study and enjoy this modern masterpiece.
You just shot an unarmed man.
Well, he should have armed himself. He's gonna decorate his saloon with my friend.
You'd be William Money out of Missouri. Kill women and children.
That's right. I've killed women and children. Killed just about everything that walks or crawled at one time or another. And I'm here to kill you, Little Bill. For what you did to Ned. You boys better move away.
Well, and so at that, it's on to our next Western drama for today. We jump forward to 2007 for 310 to Yuma. A war-wounded rancher agrees to help transport an outlaw destined to appear in court in Yuma. But the journey turns into a powerful psychological battle of willpower.
See which way you rode, Evan?
Might be headed to Bisbee.
Hands up.
22 robberies, over $400,000 in losses.
Y'all notice he didn't mention any of the lives I've taken.
We will have Ben Wade convicted and hanged, and we will pay to make it happen.
I'll come.
Well, we've mentioned Hollywood genre director James Mangold before, back in episode 4 of season 1. That's when we discussed his psychological thriller, Identity. Here, Mangold has big shoes to step into as he's remaking the classic 1957 version of 310 to Yuma, starring Glenn Ford. But he assembles a really solid cast. Russell Crowe's villainous antagonist constantly questions the morality of the law seekers around him. His intelligent character poses a challenging study of morals, as well as considerable brutality. And Christian Bale, as the wounded would-be lawman, is a brilliantly tormented silent hero. I'd suggest both these actors do some of their finest work here.
So, boys, where are we headed?
Taking you to 310 to Yuma day after tomorrow.
Shouldn't have told him that.
Relax, friend. Now if we get separated, I know where to meet up.
He's a killer, Daniel.
And somehow I have the decency to bring him to justice.
I want to come with you.
Well, you can.
What are you doing out here, Dan? You got a family to protect.
Well, talk to me like you know me, Wade. We ain't friends.
I told you to stay home.
I left home.
You turn around right now.
Your boy ain't protecting you. He's following me.
They've got a host of strong support here, including veteran Peter Fonda, as well as Ben Foster, Alan Tudyk, and even Gretchen Mol. There's also a deliciously ugly, albeit short-lived turn from Kevin Durand, who we discussed back in episode 7 of the first season of our show, for his role in The Captive. And well, 310 to Yuma, like many westerns, starts out almost as a road trip movie. Well, all right, maybe let's call it a horse trip movie instead then. Ben Foster is an actor of considerable intensity, and he's really on blazing form here as the villain's right-hand man. Pay attention also to the smaller roles in this film. There's even a small appearance by Luke Wilson here. See if you can spot him. And in the tradition of great filmmaking, there's a really nice soundtrack for the movie, composed by Marco Beltrami. Let's have a little listen. Subject of sound for now, one of the notable ways modern westerns can really improve on the classics of the mid-20th century is in the sound department. And this film features some excellent sound design, which really helps to turn the tense climax of the film in particular into a visceral sensory experience for the viewer, especially when seen in the cinema, as I originally saw it.
Hey!
Well, I won't lie, this isn't exactly a movie with a feel-good ending. It's intense, at times very violent, but always compelling Wild Western drama. The eponymous train, finally arriving in the station at 10 minutes past the hour, sits in wait for new passengers on the tracks, and the venting sound of its steam engine as it gently idles provides a powerful auditory epitaph as the final moments of the film play out. Strap up your stirrups for a wild ride, then, for this very effective update to the classic Western that is 310 to Yuma.
You done it, Pa.
Well, we now jump forward to 2016 for the Magnificent Seven. Several gunmen from a variety of backgrounds are brought together by a young widow to avenge her husband's death and protect the town from the private army of a destructive industrialist.
Man carries a gun, he tends to use it.
Dan, you dead? Pity.
I had just ordered a drink from that man.
Took a job, looking for some men to join
me. Is it difficult? Impossible.
Well, savvy listeners will be aware that this film, of course, is also a remake, this time of the classic 1960 Western starring Yul Brynner and Steve McQueen, no less. Directorial duties here are taken on by Antoine Fuqua. Now, a quick aside, he's a really interesting modern genre director in Hollywood. Fuqua has helmed several well-regarded titles, including 2001's Training Day, which won an Oscar for Denzel Washington in the lead role, as well as a nomination for Ethan Hawke as Best Supporting Actor. Fuqua makes good, visually impactful genre movies, though I have to say I've often found them a little bit wanting in the narrative department. Well, here with his Magnificent Seven, Fuqua does some of his best work, in my view. It's a huge production, a real ensemble piece, and Fuqua calls on Denzel Washington again for the lead role in this film.
Looking for a man, big fella, about your size.
What's his name?
The name his mama gave him was Daniel Harrison, but sometimes he goes by the name Potter Dan. Killed a tenant farmer and his son in cold blood. Stole a man's plow horse. Man's wife tried to intervene. Took advantage of, killed her too.
He'd heard of him.
Now, like I said, he used a different name. Had a bullet scar on his left shoulder. Right there. Now, Powder Dan ran with an outlaw named July Bully. May he rest in peace.
He's dead?
Yes, sir.
How'd he die?
Whispered in his ear.
How was that?
Ethan Hawke is also recalled for duties as one of the troop, and Chris Pratt appears for a nice bit of comic relief here. Many listeners will recognize him from blockbusters such as Guardians of the Galaxy and Jurassic World. A huge raft of other well-known actors join the fray, but full marks for pathos must go to Hayley Bennett, who really motivates the story arc here with great conviction as the widow who calls on this motley crew for vengeance.
That man murdered my husband.
I want something. I take it.
He will take everything we have.
So you seek revenge?
I seek righteousness, but I'll take revenge.
I need more than a few to help us fight.
What a bunch of misfits we are.
You know how to shoot that thing?
I'm good.
So am I.
He's local, my friend.
Oh, we're good. We got a Mexican.
The film's not perfect, though, arguably running rather long at 2 hours and 12 minutes. As is the wont of so many westerns, there's a very intense shootout in the final act. It's tremendously shot and staged, but for me, adds a little too much in the way of blazing cannonades than was really necessary for the story. But don't let that put you off. This is a very worthy remake, with fun performances and strong production values throughout. So pull down the brim of your 50-gallon hat and buckle down for the Magnificent Seven.
Why are you here, fighting someone else's fight?
These people deserve their lives back.
Just make sure we're fighting the battle in front of us, not the battle behind.
Every man's got the right to choose where he dies.
We have nowhere else to go, so...
Our next film today, then, is one we'll be focusing on more in our upcoming interview. It's 2014's The Dark Valley. A mysterious stranger arrives at a remote village high in the Austrian Alps, but when the snow sets in for winter, the locals realize he's not just there to take photos of the scenery.
Some things from the past may not be spoken of, but there are things that can never be forgotten.
Yes, that's right. This is a European Alpine Western, no less. Something of a novel setting, indeed. Our mysterious protagonist here is played by British actor Sam Riley, who had his breakout role in the 2007 musical biopic Control, about the troubled lead singer of British rock band Joy Division. In The Dark Valley, his character becomes a lodger with a widow and her daughter outside of the main village. Said daughter is set to marry the love of her life, but there's a very nasty tradition in this town that looms over everything. Riley's joined by a raft of experienced Teutonic actors, including the very experienced Austrian Tobias Beer, as well as theatre actress Carmen Kattel, who plays the role of the widowed mother, who I mentioned above. And I'm very excited to announce that Carmen will be joining us via web call from Austria in just a couple of minutes' time here to talk about her role in The Dark Valley and her acting career. Very exciting, folks, so do stay tuned.
You better keep moving.
No place for you. You could still leave.
Before we talk to Carmen, let's just finish setting the scene here for The Dark Valley. The director is Andreas Prochaska, an experienced genre TV director, also from Austria. And if you follow the local film industry here in Malta, you may recognize his name from the wartime drama TV series Das Boot, which just finished filming season 3 here in Malta in early 2021. Well, Prochaska directed the entire first season of Das Boot, part of which was also shot here in Malta for the submarine scene. And here in The Dark Valley, Prochaska absolutely steeps this brooding, snow-set western in mystery and fog, creating a very palpable sense of ominous portent. It's all terrifically shot and staged, every frame a painting, really. We get the sense of a story that's been very carefully storyboarded.
Who are you?
You knew my mother.
They'll come for us.
No. I'm going to them.
You'll notice some of these clips here were in English. Those are dubbed lines from the UK trailer, and I'm only using them here because we're in Radioland to give you some story beats. But when you watch the film, for full effect, I do recommend you see it in its original German with subtitles. The movie does have dialogue, to be sure. There's even a recurring and effective voiceover by the daughter's character. In this clip from a key montage in the film, don't worry too much about her words, which are in German. Rather, listen to the composition and the background music to get an idea of the quality of this film's soundtrack.
Darfst dem Brennerbauern ihr Wort geben? Und sein Blieben. Und dann ist der Tag gekommen, an dem der Brenner das Versprechen eingefordert hat. Jetzt fast nicht glauben können, wie sie das Klopfen am Fenster gehört hat und ihr Geliebter kommen ist, um sie zu holen. Sie haben glaubt, die Wirtsleute werden sie verstecken, wenn sie ihnen Geld geben. Aber der Brennerbauer hat mehr zahlt. Gierig war es halt, die Wirtin. Und feig.
So much of this story is told through faces, reactions, moments between key characters. That old cinematic adage, show, don't tell, is in full evidence here, and it adds tremendous dramatic weight to the proceedings. More on that when we talk to actress Carmen Kattel very shortly.
Come!
I swear. Yes, there are scenes absolutely dripping in tense drama here. The story is a tragic transgenerational tale of a mountain town oligarchy. But the less I say about that, the better. There are thematic shades of Mel Gibson's historical war epic Braveheart here from 1995, and also of Iñárritu's 2015 adventure, The Revenant, which we discussed in episode 12 of season 1 of our show.
The woman! Lucy, take his rifle.
One of the Dark Valley's real delights is in its set pieces, of which there are several. There's a scene in which the townsmen fell trees on the mountainside, sliding them down the hill in preparation for use as fuel in the town's homes. It's a classic piece of genre movie making, with depth of field, mist obscuring our field of vision, and plumes of white breath enunciating the character's predicament. Terrific filmmaking, and I would imagine a very challenging location shoot indeed. The story builds to a suitably epic climax. At some point, you'll have figured out where it's all headed, but that does nothing to dilute this dark tale of redemption. Moments of violence do occur, so please be warned. Beyond that, though, I thoroughly recommend this excellent European entry in the canon of recently made westerns, paying homage to the greats of the 20th century.
Lucy, get on the horse. Let him go. Go, Lucy. Go. Go on, go.
You. You're dead. I swear.
And well, now that I've hopefully piqued your interest about the Dark Valley, I'm delighted to welcome Carmen Gattel onto the show. She's one of the main supporting actors in the film. Carmen trained at the Innsbruck Drama School in Austria before taking on major theatrical roles. She founded the independent Staatstheater Innsbruck in 2001. Since then, she's also branched into TV and film roles, which is what led me to reach out to her for today's show. Carmen, thank you so much for joining us here on More Than a Movie today.
Hello, Andrew. Hello, everybody. Thank you for the invitation.
You're welcome, and very happy to have you on the show. So to begin with, Carmen, let me ask, can you talk about how you became involved in this film, The Dark Valley? Were you approached for the role? Did you audition? What was the process?
Actually, I had already worked with the film director, Andreas Prochaska, before. And one day, my mobile rang, and it was Andreas on the line. So, he asked me to meet for a coffee. Then he told me about his new film project, The Dark Valley. Mm-hmm. And asked me if I'd be interested in playing the female protagonist's mother. Mm-hmm. I mean, of course I wanted to play that role. When do you have the chance to act in an Alpine Western?
That's right.
And so he invited me to an audition, which went very well.
Okay, and was that an audition just with the director, or was his casting director also present? Was it a big team?
No, it was only with the director and another actor. And then he filmed everything, and then I had to wait for the answer.
Right.
Because there are a lot of people involved in this decision. As you can imagine, I was then really happy when I was given the part.
That's great. Yes, I'm sure it was a great joy to hear that news. So, Carmen, it's clear that you've also done a lot of theatre acting. What are the main differences for you as a performer between acting in theatre and acting in film?
Classical question. Yes, I can't really tell which one I favour. I think I love both, but indeed it's really different. The camera catches everything, and each single thought is noticeable. I mean, you can pretend. Theater pardons much more. Mm. At the theater, we rehearse together for weeks. We develop the characters together. We try out different things. And then you perform the whole play from the beginning to the end in one piece. In the theater, you feel the audience, and each performance is different depending on the audience energy and the actor's sensitivities. The theater, the characters keep on developing from performance to performance. They are never finished. And in film, on your first day of shooting, you have to be prepared right down to the last detail. You must identify with your character 100%. You even have to think, to feel, to react in your character.
Very interesting. And so, in terms of being a performer, do you prefer film to theater, or do you enjoy them both because of their differences?
No, I love it both. I really love both.
Right, they bring
what
their
I really
own
love
challenges.
About the film, yes. What I really love about the film is that quiet moment before they start shooting. You are totally focused on the scene.
Yes.
There's a lot more of intimacy, and mm-hmm. it feels authentic, real. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. And do you still find yourself getting nervous, even though you don't have an audience as such? You just have the crew and the director and the other cast members. Do you get nervous on a film set?
At the first day, yes. And after a few days, no. In theater, I'm nervous every time.
I see. Interesting. Very.
But only before I go on stage.
Right. After the performance starts, you're in.
Yes. Then I'm in.
Right.
Yes.
Okay, so let's talk about the some of the other cast. Sam Riley, who's one of the lead actor, is a British actor. And although his performance is largely silent in the film, it's a very visual performance, like many of them, he does speak German several times in the movie. How good is his German in real life? And how was that? What was he like to work with on the film set?
Sam. And Mr. Sam, he's a really great person. And it's a great fun to work with. He's a very funny guy. And I remember one scene which was really serious, and he made a lot of jokes, and we really had laughing fits. So you call it, I think.
Exactly. Yes. Laughing fits. Perfect. That's interesting that you say that, because his character, his performance in the movie is very serious and intense, right?
It is.
And yet he was able to joke and create a lot of humor on the set.
Yes, and it's in a moment, as soon as they start shooting, he's switched immediately into his role, and is 100% on the scene.
That's very interesting. Okay. Go ahead,
yes, and he's a very sensitive partner, a great actor, and he doesn't have his head in the clouds.
So focused.
Yes, he's very focused, and his German, because you asked me about his German, is very, very pleasant. You can really talk to him in German, and he can really answer in German.
That's great. Okay, so let's talk a bit about your role. So you've got a supporting role in The Dark Valley, but it's a very important one. And as I mentioned, it's a very visual film. As the mother, you have to convey a lot of emotion facially, you know, without saying any words. So, for example, the mother's worry, her concern, her feeling of helplessness and dread. How do you prepare for a role like this? Were there a lot of rehearsals and a lot of read-throughs before you arrived on location at the film set?
First of all, I read the whole script, and then I read it again and again, and that's where I get the first atmosphere of the story. And then I do some research on the time frame and the location of the plot. And then I start working on my own character. And in this case, it meant to take horse riding lessons. And 10 days before we started shooting, the whole crew lived in a hotel in South Tyrol, between the mountains, near the shooting location. And the first day, the most of the actors and actresses read the whole script together, but only for one time. Mm-hmm. And then again, we had horse riding lessons, horse carriage lessons. We worked at the farmer's house to get the feeling of the rough work. We had to mark the stables out, feed the cows. And then after a few days, my hair was dyed black. And that also helps me to get into that role. And then we got the costumes, the big skirts, mm-hmm. and the makeup. And all these helped me.
So it sounds like it was a very immersive experience. You learned to ride the horse, you lived on the ranch, you really felt what it was like perhaps to live in that period and in that mountain village, right?
Yes, yes. And then I spent a lot of time with my beautiful and great film daughter, Lucy, mm-hmm. Paula Bear, mm-hmm. and we were taking walks through the forest to intensify our relationship and to assimilate our dialects.
Right, because it's a specific dialect of Austrian German, I suppose, that they're speaking?
Yes, it is. And Paula, she's a German girl, so she really has to learn this dialect. That was the reason why we have been walking a lot of times through the forest,
right.
to talk and talk and talk.
So, in a way, you were her giving her some coaching on the dialect, on the accent, voice coaching.
Exactly. I mean, she had a coach, but it was important that we have the same dialect.
Of course. Of course. Very interesting. Okay, thank you for those answers, Carmen. Let's change the subject just a little bit for a moment. Earlier in the show, I was talking about other Western drama movies. So I wanted to ask you, do you have a classic Western film that you particularly love, Carmen?
I really love the Western McCabe and Mrs. Miller, directed from Robert Altman, from 1971.
You say you come up here from very far to see me? Is there something I can do for you?
Do you have anything to eat? I'm bloody starving. Took 6 hours to get up here in that flipping contraption.
Well, you have to forgive me. My kitchen ain't in operation yet, but I could take you up to the restaurant up there if you're hungry enough.
I'm hungry enough. I could eat a bloody horse.
Well, Sheehan's place, you probably will.
It's on the front of your wit, I see.
There it is. So Robert Altman's Western drama going all the way back, as Carmen said, to 1971. Well, now, regular listeners to our show here might recognize Robert Altman's name. We discussed him back in episode 5 of the first season of our show. Of course, he directed the film Popeye, which was shot here in Malta back in 1980. But talking about McCabe and Mrs. Miller, Carmen, tell us, why did you love this film so much?
You know, I love that the female part is at least as strong as the male protagonist mm-hmm. in a Western. Mm-hmm. And I love the atmosphere of the movie, the scenography, mm-hmm. the characters and their faces. And anything happens only in that small village.
Which is not entirely dissimilar to the film we're talking about that you acted in today. It's set in a village.
It's set in a village, yes. And what I also love about that film is, at the beginning of the film, he appears as a typical lonesome Western hero on the back of his horse, and then soon you realize that he's not the hero you were expecting. Because it is an anti-Western, it includes all typical features of a Western, but the characters are given in much more depth.
So,
you understand what
yes,
I mean?
Yes. So in a way, it's a Western movie that doesn't follow the conventions exactly.
Yes.
Right. Which in a way is classic Robert Altman, because he was a sort of a director who reveled in making unusual films and trying to buck the genre tropes whenever he could, I think, didn't he?
Yes, you're right, definitely. Mm-hmm.
That's great. Well, okay, so we've got a little bit of music from the soundtrack of McCabe and Mrs. Miller, so let's have a listen to this little piece performed by Leonard Cohen.
It's true that all the men you knew were dealers who said they were through with dealing every time you gave them shelter. I know that kind of man. It's hard to hold the hand of anyone who's reaching for the sky just to surrender. Who is reaching for the sky just to surrender. And then sweeping up the jokers that he left behind, you find he did not leave you very much, not even laughter. Like any dealer, he was watching for the card that is so high and wild, he'll never need to deal another. Traveling lady, stay a while until the night is over. I'm just a station on your way, I know I'm not your lover. And why are you so quiet now?
Okay, back to Dark Valley now, Carmen. So, can we talk a little bit more about the filming experience? You mentioned your preparation and work leading up to the shoot. How long were you in that mountain location for filming in total?
Oof, it is a long time ago, so I don't remember everything, but I think we spent about 5 weeks there with a little breaks in between.
5 weeks?
5 weeks, yes. I think it was 5 weeks.
Okay.
For me.
Right, for your particular role.
Yes, for me, yes.
And so in those 5 weeks, give us an idea, were you typically on set every day or would there be a lot of preparation between filming days? How did that work? If you can remember.
No, there have been a lot of preparation days in between because we had to get on the horse again. I walked with Lucy. Yes.
Right. So one of the things that struck me about when I was thinking about the production is it looked like very, very cold weather. Obviously, it's up in the mountains of the Alps. There's a lot of snow.
Mm-hmm.
Did the cast and crew get very cold and suffer a lot? It must have been very, very challenging to film up there.
It was extremely cold, but they have good clothes. And I remember one night when we had a night shoot. It was the scene in the village when the old farmer, the father of the Brennan sons, came to the village to see his dead son on the carriage, mm-hmm. killed by a tree trunk.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was 3 o'clock in the morning. A lot of extras and horses were there, and it was so cold that they handed out hot water bottles and heating pads and also blankets for the horses. But then after a while, the horses started coughing.
Huh.
So we had to stop filming because it gets dangerous for the animals when they start coughing. And they had to bring them into the stables. We could only continue filming without showing the horses.
Gosh.
But it, yes, that was a bit strange. But it's moments like these that make filming so authentic and real. And I'm a little bit thrilled to situations like this.
And so you mentioned it was at 3 o'clock in the morning. I mean, it sounds amazing.
Yes.
But was it filming all through the night then until the sun came up? How long did the shoot last at night?
I think maybe it was, I think we worked till 5 o'clock in the morning. Mm.
It's a long night.
Yeah, it was really a long night, but I love it.
Indeed. So this was a period piece, Carmen. Obviously, it's set in olden day Austria. So talk about a little about how much time was spent with the costumes and the makeup before each scene would be shot. Was that very elaborate and time-consuming?
So for me, I think it took 1 hour to make my face look old and nearly 2 hours to transform into the gathering, because there are a lot of skirts but I enjoy this moment because it gives me time to grow into my role. That's also why I love historical pants.
Right, so you're being dressed in a way, right? You have makeup and costume people helping you to get dressed, but that you're saying that also helps you to feel the character that you're getting into.
Yes, totally. I really love it. It's really like a, it feels like a transformation.
That's interesting, yes. Okay, so the movie scenes in the Dark Valley feel very precise in terms of the story beats that are happening in each scene. Can you tell us a bit about Andrzej Prochaska's style as a director? Is he very active when giving specific directions to actors?
Mm-hmm. I think he's very clear in his instructions, and he doesn't stop until he gets what he wants. So you can really totally trust him. I can totally trust him.
Right, so I guess it must be sometimes difficult as an actor in these very dramatic scenes, because you don't know what's being shot, right? You don't know how close up the shot is, how many other characters necessarily are in shot, which cameras are looking at you. So I imagine the bond between you and the director is very important in terms of him giving you those specific directions.
Yeah, yes, of course, it's very important, but you know how close are you in the camera. You have to know. It's very important. Of course, you know if they do a close-up or anything else.
So he's quite clear about exactly what's being shot. Okay.
Yes.
Very interesting. Okay. Now, so another aspect, let's talk about the story and the themes for a little bit. The story of the Dark Valley has a lot of very macho male characters, I think it's fair to say, which maybe is common for a lot of Western films. But how did you approach playing one of the main, most important female characters in such a patriarchal story?
As a widow, I concentrated on being a good mother for my daughter, and tried to survive. The narrowness, the physical and the mental, as well as the priest's attitude, didn't leave me a choice.
And it occurred to me when I watched the film, one of the early scenes is where your character has a conversation with the protagonist, Sam Riley's character, where you introduce, in a way, the family. Right, this big group of men who run the village, and the way you performed, I thought you did a very good job of portraying the sort of the dread and the danger that this village is living under. Do you know what I mean?
You mean the scene on the table?
Yes, exactly.
When you sat there and ate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He asked me about the Brenner brothers,
exactly. In a way, you have to, as a performance, communicate to the audience just how dangerous the situation is, because it's something they're not familiar with yet. And I thought that scene worked very well.
Yes, it worked very well, exactly. And this is the moment where he asked me about the Brenner sons, and it was the moment where I have to show also the audience. There is something around the village which is not what is not right.
Exactly. So, Carmen, let's talk a bit more about the overall experience you had when you were filming The Dark Valley. Do you have a funny moment or a story from your time on the production which maybe you can tell us about?
Yes, I can. And it happened on my first shooting day. I think it was my first take. It was the day of the marriage of my daughter Lucy. We sat together on the carriage on the way to the church, and I steered the carriage. Actually, it was a sledge pulled by the horse, and we were sitting quite low above the ground. And the horse in front of us seemed really huge. And then the horse trainer gave me introductions how to guide the carriage. It's very easy, he said. It goes up. If it goes up, you can run the horse. And if you reach the hill before it goes down, exactly in that moment, you have to pull the brake and also pull the leash. Because otherwise, the weight of the sledge pushed the horse forward.
Right.
And that's exactly what happened. The horse got such a boost from the back that I bolted and ran like hell. And Paolo screamed and embracing my arm, and with all my strength set, I struggled to pull the brake and stop the horse, but nothing happened. And this silly horse kept on running. And then I saw the cameraman, a little hope, but he jumped out of the way. So fortunately, around the next corner, I saw the horse trainer, but he also jumped out of the way. And now I really started to get nervous. And then, thank God, the landscape opened up. And I managed to steer the horse to run in a circle. And that was our rescue. Yes, and then nothing happened. But my heart beat like a rabbit.
Right. And I presume that take wasn't one of the ones that found its way into the final movie, right?
Yes, you're right.
but no one was hurt, if I understood correctly, right?
Thankfully. No one was hurt, no.
Gosh. Well, I'm very glad to hear that.
Start. Yes, me too.
And then presumably you had to rearrange, everyone had to calm down, and you had to repeat that carriage ride again. Is that right?
Yes, we had to repeat it again, but then everything was really fine.
Okay, so a minor mishap, we would call it.
How you call it?
A minor mishap. In English we'd say it was a minor problem, basically.
I understand. Okay. Yes.
Well, Carmen, this was really, really fantastic. I mean, I've talked about the movie in the run-up to our interview. I think it's a really, very, very, very good film, and I think it's a film that all of you as a team can be very proud of, and I'm very grateful for you having spent the time to join us on the show today to tell us a bit about your experience making this film. So I do wish you the very best of luck with your theatre and acting experience in the future. We hope we'll be seeing you on the big screen again soon, and thank you so much for joining us, Carmen.
Thank you for inviting me, Andrew. It was very nice.
You're very welcome. So, what did you think of the movie selection in our show and of our interview today? We'd love to know what you thought of it. For all that or any other feedback, suggestions and questions, please email us at morethanamovieqs@gmail.com. That's morethanamovieqs, all one word, @gmail.com. This More Than a Movie episode was written and presented by me, Andrew Bonello. A huge thank you to our guest, Carmen Cartel, for joining us today, and also, of course, to our illustrious sound designer, Jordi De Bono. The intro music was Creepy Comedy, and the outro is Inspiring Teaser, both by Raphael Crux at filmmusic.io. The clips are licensed under creativecommons.org, version 4. Thanks for listening, and I do hope you'll join us again next week when we delve into a new episode of More Than a Movie.